Sports Day for Kia. The new Kia Niro electric SUV range has landed. And Red Energy, awarded Canstar's most trusted energy retailer nationally for 2021. That's Red Energy.
Oh, no. 7 minutes past six. Welcome to Sports Day. I promised myself, Jimmy, I wouldn't fall into this. I promised. But from 5 a.m. this morning, God knows why I was up that early, until now, it's hard to escape the passion of Melburnians being released into the wild. Have you ever, as we welcome you in, James, seen so many television crosses from pubs and restaurants?
No, I haven't. And I'm happy they're all back opening. And hopefully they can start turning a positive trade. But we're not free yet.
No, we're not.
We've gone from solitary confinement to now we're allowed to play in the yard.
Oh, I like that. Yeah. Okay. And they're not bad.
And until my bowls club is open where I can punch a few pints.
Jimmy said punch a few pints. Can we save that place, Lawrence and Matt, behind the glass?
What hat am I wearing right now?
Middle Park Bowling Club.
Yes.
I never saw you as a lawn bowlsman.
Yeah, I am. I've got the merch.
Are you half good?
Yeah, I'm better than half good. I'm Robbie Perella.
I don't know who that is.
He's one of the all-time great.
Well, I don't follow bowls particularly closely. Huge night coming up. We're just about to be joined by Australian sporting royalty in a cricket sense. Pat Cummins, probably the future Test captain.
Good bloke royalty too.
From Abu Dhabi. He's got a day off. He's going to join us. Of course, the T20 World Cup. What are we, only a day away from their opening game against South Africa? Just before we get to Pat, and Lawrence is going to get him on the line, I want to talk to you about the biggest developing issue in sport as far as Australians globally, and that's Ben Simmons. We've talked about him all week, but it's gone from bad to worse. So if you haven't been up to date with this story, Ben Simmons turned up to training today and essentially said he doesn't want to be there. And not just, you know, in a broad sense, which we know he doesn't want to be there, but he said, I've got a stiff back. And according to Howard Eskin, who's a Philly radio host, said that he used the mental health card and said that mentally he wasn't up to training and up to playing. Now, that's since been refuted in different areas. Wojo, the great Woj on ESPN, Adrian Wojnarowski, he's reporting that Simmons is expected to come to the 76ers shoot around on Saturday, which is Australian time, to discuss his playing status. It's a really sad story from where I'm sitting, Jimmy, because has been, up until all of this, much loved and obviously a huge talent.
Yeah, and if he thinks the Sixers are going to buckle, all the language coming out of the Sixers management, Daryl Morey, who's very well respected, he's their list manager, to borrow in AFL terms, because we know in NBA they can be vice president of basketball operations and
yada yada. Huge titles,
they sound like presidential sort of titles.
They do, actually.
He is well respected. He's built up many NBA teams and he's been in the game a long time. And he uses things in a cold and calculated way, which is analytics. He's known to build teams based around analytics. And he's quite openly said today that if this takes 4 years, it'll be 4 years of this sort of stuff. So they're not backing away from it. Doc Rivers, the coach, has said, every single day I'll give him an opportunity to come in here.
Yeah, he said that during the week.
Yep, and he can prove himself and get back with the team.
So where does this go, though? He's got this five-year, $180 million deal, whatever it is. Rich Paul, the biggest agent in basketball, LeBron's agent.
He's a kingmaker.
So, but what's going to happen? It's hard to know how this is going to play out.
Well, one, it'd be damaging for the management group.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Because if you can't get this organised, it reflects badly on you, that you've been giving poor advice or you haven't been able to manage your way through this. But also, it reflects badly on Ben and pretty much the Sixers. Well, they're calling his bluff. They're like, how long do you want to sit out of basketball for? Because they've actually said, until we get almost an all-star talent, an elite-type talent, and a package of picks or something that actually comes in our favour as a trade, he's not going anywhere. And they'll just keep fining him. That's how they recoup some of the money. They're going to take it as a loss because
he's clearly not getting the right advice, though. And yes, I'm not taking his excuse of a stiff back on face value, but he's not getting the right advice if after all this has happened, he walks into training and says, oh, I've got a stiff back.
But they would have seen James Harden the way he blew himself up out of Houston last year and got to where he wanted to.
Yeah. James Harden, probably a few more runs on the board, but I take your point.
Yeah, 100%, but this is the playbook he's taking. He's going to make him such a distraction on the team where every single player just goes, get rid of him now.
Mm. Yeah, as I said, the word that I use to describe this is just sad. I don't want to be talking about Ben like this. We all want to be talking about as the all-star that he can be and has been.
Well, I think also off the back of the Olympics, we would have loved to have seen him. But then we should be talking about the first week of Patty Mills going 7-for-7 from three in his debut for the Nets. Giddy setting an Oklahoma Thunder record for 10 rebounds on debut. And then it should be Ben Simmons, Ingles, and we're going, how good? Like, could have that been the Australian basketball team?
I think it was Jared Waitley that said earlier in the week that this has been 6 months of Ben ruining his goodwill. And I think that's
really fair
with Australians. And I think that's probably the perfect way to describe it. That's the negative story surrounding Australians overseas at the moment. The positive story is not just the T20 World Cup, which we're all excited about. We play South Africa tomorrow, Saturday, Australian time. But also the man who's going to help lead us to it and also lead the bowling attack for the Ashes. He's the vice captain. He's potentially the future captain. His name is Pat Cummins, and he joins us from Abu Dhabi. Pat, welcome to Sports Day.
Hey, boys. How are you doing?
We're doing pretty well. What did you make of Wednesday night against India?
It was a good hit out. Against India, always tough to play them. Unfortunately didn't get the win, but I think, a lot of players got quite a bit out of the practice game. I don't know. It was my first game in 4 or 5 months, so I was itching to get out there and felt really good. So moving on to Saturday now against South Africa.
Pat, what'd you take away from the warm-up game regarding the wickets over there? We've seen different tournaments, spin to win. We've seen pace bowlers bowling slower bounces. What was your big takeaway? What'll be effective?
Yeah, it's potentially a bit hard to judge just because it's an outground. I know there'd been quite a bit of training on it, so it was a little bit tired. But, there's two games on most days. It's an afternoon game and a night game. And I think the way the wickets play in those two scenarios are quite different. The day's pretty dry. So, you'll see the slow ball bounces and the, maybe a bit more spin. Or else, the night game's a bit dewy and ball skids on, so might be a bit more, the scoring might be a bit more free.
What are we expecting from the Australian batting lineup? It always gets talked about. We've almost had a host of openers bat in the top six. We look like we've got some more specialists in the side. We've even had the wicket keepers down at nine still batting. Are we going to roll with a long, long batting lineup?
I think the way, the ability for people like Maxwell, Marsh, Stoinis, having the benefit that they can bowl overs provides that opportunity. So we'll see. We don't know the makeup of the side yet, but I think what you will see is a batting lineup that's chockers full of talent, and T20 is a format not for the fearless. You want to go out there, you want to make an impact on the game straight away, and potentially with a couple of extra batters, It gives those openers up the top a bit more of a freedom to take the game on. So, expecting big things. Everyone's hitting the ball beautifully.
Aussie fast bowler Pat Cummins joining us on Sports Day. Jimmy, the most time you would have spent away with teammates on a regular basis would have just been an overnight trip, right? You play on a Friday night.
Yeah, or a training camp
for a week. I'm interested, Pat, a trip like this in Abu Dhabi, how do you go personally, living away from home and spending most of your time in hotel rooms? I assume there's guys that want to annoy people in their spare time. I assume there's guys that just want to stay away from everyone in their spare time. Paint us a little picture of the team dynamic.
Everyone's a little bit differently. Does it a bit differently, but to be honest, for especially the experienced guys here, it's part of life. You get used to it. In a busy year, you might spend 9 or 10 months on the road in hotel beds. So everyone's got a bit of a routine. I think you try and bring some normality to life inside a hotel and a bubble. Like today, we're able to get out and play golf. It's not all too bad. This is one of the easier tours. Got everything around us that we could need. It's a month long and it's a World Cup. You wouldn't want to be anywhere else. So, some of the tougher tours are the ones that go for 5-6 months.
Well, one of the big personality types, especially on the field, James Pattinson, always enjoyed his work. Even when I used to roll down and watch him play at the Junction Oval, he was always fun to watch.
Yep.
Did he surprise you with his retirement around the group?
Yeah, going to miss Big Jimmy. I kind of knew in the background, he's battling away with, he's been battling away with his body kind of his whole career. So, it's disappointing to see just because I know, how good he is. But unfortunately, he's, won't be there for the Ashes going forward. I love playing alongside Jimmy, just a supremely talented bowler and just a teammate you love running alongside. Lifts everyone around him. So great that he's, still going to be playing cricket. Going to miss him. He's a beauty.
You said it's good fun, World Cup, but there's some good fun coming around the corner. Home Test Series, the Ashes. Mm. Couple of shorter balls to the Poms when we roll into them, just even in the T20, just to let them know you're in the area.
I might save them up. We can't wait as well. It's absolutely buzzing. Like, this is, could be the best few months of your cricketing career. It's, World Cup into an Ashes doesn't get much better than that. And, especially in a home Ashes series, hopefully big crowds turn out. We just can't wait. We feel like it's, team's in a really good place. Lots of guys in the prime of their careers, so all set up for a big series.
You mentioned a couple of months. So you got the T20 World Cup, the Ashes, and it feels like we're preparing for another T20 World Cup. How does that go with the planning of this one, or is it just purely focused, let's knock this one over, and it could be a completely different squad in about 18 months' time?
All the planning's been really specific to, this World Cup. 12 months ago, we kind of knew that it was going to be here or India. It's been really specific to here. Haven't really looked too far ahead. I know, obviously, the next one's in Australia in about a year. So, get through this one, make any adjustments if we have to. But I'd be surprised if the core of this squad wasn't there next year.
You mentioned the adjustments. We're ranked number 7 in T20. It hasn't been our strongest suit while we've been going really well at tests and one day. What is the big adjustment that we need to do to get a better result at this World Cup?
I think, personnel is going to make a big difference. We've got a really, full strength squad here. Whereas in the past, I think a lot of the series have been, just after, big one day or test series, and you get various players that might be missing or rested or injured. So I think having everyone here available is a huge, huge plus. And I think, I look around the side, you've got some world-class match winners here that have done it for IPL teams, BBL teams. I think it's just bringing it all together. All clicking here for Australia. And I'm really confident. I think, we're much better than, our results suggest. And, I know the boys kind of want to make amends for a few of those, results.
Yes, and we would like you to as well. No doubt about that, Pat. Hey, Pat, I remember hearing from you earlier in the year saying that you thought there was no reason why a fast bowler couldn't be a test captain. And I'm sure you've read articles or heard a bit of commentary around that you're in the conversation, in the frame. Can I just ask, have you naturally found yourself developing your leadership skills in the last 12 months in preparation for something like that that could arise?
I think I've been exposed to a bit more. Just being vice captain over the last couple of years is, puts you closer to conversations with the captains and the coaches and, senior players. And I think the other part of it as well is I think it's my 11th or 12th season kind of with Australia. So naturally you assume a bit more of a, kind of responsibility when you play more. So I feel like I've learned a lot and developed quite a bit over the last few years.
And last serious one from me, we've all been talking about Dave Warner's struggles recently, mainly in domestic T20. I know he had a golden duck the other night. I'm so fascinated by this in that batsmen go in and out of form quite regularly, and that's just by virtue of being a batsman, right? I assume bowlers go out of form as well. Now, when batsmen go out of form, they find themselves getting out more easily earlier in their innings. What happens to you, Pat, if and when you do have a form slump?
Yeah, it's similar. A lot of the time, there's nowhere to hide. If you feel like it's not coming out as well, you've still got to bowl plenty of overs. But I think it's probably more benefit for bowlers in that you do get the opportunity to keep going.
Yeah.
You know, you might be hitting the ball beautifully, just haven't got the runs to show for it. And it kind of starts compounding. Whereas, yeah, bowler, you can kind of work it out as you go. You get plenty of opportunity to find form, you know, on the ground, out in the middle. I think that's part of experience. The more you play, you do find those different options to get yourself out of those form slumps, just like a batter. But yeah, I've always found it. One benefit of being a bowler is you kind of can get over it pretty quickly out in the middle.
Now, I assume Dave's going to be one of those guys joining you at the golf course. Any banter flying around about if he pulls one into the water, just relaying it back to his recent form slump?
I might leave that one out, but there's enough.
Who would be the one to deliver that sort of banter? Maxwell, I assume?
Someone who's very brave and out of swing range of Davey. But don't worry, there's plenty of ammo enough for the boys. So it's it's not a very it could be a hostile golf course for a couple of hours there if the boys are on.
Okay, before you leave us, your biggest strength as a golfer and biggest weakness?
Oh, strength, I can swing hard. Weakness... Irons, chipping and putting. Doesn't leave much, does it?
No, it doesn't. I'm really looking forward to seeing and hearing about how this round goes. Pat, great to have you on, mate. We don't get to speak to international cricket as much as we'd like to. That's mainly because you guys are always very busy and overseas. But it's great to catch up. We're looking forward to having you back on our shores for the Ashes and good luck in the T20 World Cup.
Great. Thanks, boys. Chat soon.
Pat Cummins there. Aussie fast bowler, absolute star. You can just see why he's being talked about as next captain. Natural, insightful, gives his opinions.
Skilled, good speaker, as you said.
How do you go on the golf course?
It used to be handy. You just don't have much time to play anymore and no one's been able to do anything for 2 years. So how do you reckon most people have been going?
That's a pretty good summary, James. Yeah. More sports after this.
It was probably from round 9 against Port. I pinged my third hamstring for this year, and I think it was about my 20th overall. So whilst the hamstrings were hanging in there, I've athletically declined. I always said to myself I'd rather go out slightly early than slightly too late.
Welcome back to Sports Day. That is the voice of retiring premiership captain at the Western Bulldogs, Easton Wood. 14 years. Started in 2009 and then... Wow, 188 games, and of course, helped the Bulldogs lift that illustrious trophy that they were searching for so many decades, only the second premiership captain in the absence, of course, of the great Robert Murphy, and had a year left on his contract, but as you heard from him then, Jimmy, obviously succumbed to injuries in the end.
Yeah, and he relies a lot on his athleticism, and he highlighted that perfectly, because when you think of Easton Wood, you think of that huge vertical leap, him floating across, being the third man up, intercepting the ball and providing
quick
some rebound.
Short distances.
Yeah. Yep. So the fact that he feels like he couldn't do that would affect the way he played the game, which then in turn he thinks he wouldn't be in the best 22 if he couldn't be at his athletic peak.
Did you notice this year his form coming down? Like, obviously he was dealing with injuries.
Yeah.
But he felt like he lost a step, didn't he? And that's nothing against him. He's 32, injuries taking hold.
Well, I thought they managed it really smartly, especially coming into the finals, because they knew he had a lot of injuries. So they just narrowed his role. Like, he ended up becoming a complete stopper. So that's your matchup.
Mm.
Try and put that one to bed instead of being that zone off player. You know, there's my direct matchup. Oh, I can peel off. I can help out Keith. You know what I mean? So they actually identified that he hadn't had a lot of footy through the year and just narrowed his role.
It must be, I mean, I'm sure he's dealing with the thoughts of retirement at the moment, but it must be nice when it all sinks in for him to think about his legacy and what he's left behind and what he was a part of.
Every time he goes back to the Bulldogs, or there's any sort of function room, there's going to be an image of him holding the Premiership Cup.
Yeah, with Bob on the other side. And I thought that was one of the great images of the last 50 years of footy for me.
It's one of those images, you know, every time sometimes you watch a movie or you see something or a piece of action, you find something new in it. Next time you see that image, have a look at Luke Beveridge's face. He's like the proudest smiling dad look on his face. Like,
so he's standing behind the trophy. I'm just trying to picture.
He's standing sort of back right shoulder of Easton Wood.
Okay.
And he's just like, the look on his face is unbelievable. Like, it's the biggest proud dad moment ever. Like, he's not fist pumping. He's not carrying on. He's just
that grin.
He's just beaming.
Do they make top four next year, the Dogs?
Yes.
Yeah, I think they do as well. I think they'll be right around the mark. More Sports Day coming at you right after this. Don't go anywhere, by the way. Later in the show, we're going to get a full Manukato Stakes and Cox Plate preview from the great Andrew Bensley. Welcome back to Sports Day. More coming up with Jimmy Bartel, including a full preview from Moonee Valley from Andrew Bensley. What's that? In about 12 minutes' time, we'll speak to Ben, so don't go anywhere. But first, it's time for news headlines with the great Tony Tardio.
Good evening. The Premier is warning Victoria will see record high COVID case numbers. 2,189 new infections have been recorded today and 16 deaths, the youngest a man aged in his 60s. 90% of eligible Victorians have now received at least one dose of the COVID vaccine. The land search in Western Australia for missing 4-year-old Cleo Smith has been scaled back almost a week after she disappeared from a remote campsite. Detectives are now focused on searching for a possible kidnapper. Police have questioned Hollywood actor Alec Baldwin after he accidentally shot dead a colleague and injured another on the set of his latest movie in New Mexico. The 63-year-old fired a prop gun, which had been loaded with bullets. And a South Melbourne couple has won $60 million in last night's Powerball draw. They were the only Division 1 winning entry. More news at 7.
Time now for a sports update for Tyre Power, Australia's biggest independent tyre retailer, keeping you safe on the roads. Tyrepower.com.au.
Welcome back to Sports Day. Sam McClure and Jimmy Bartel with you. Hey, Jimmy, I read from Jake Nile in The Age today. I'm quoting his first part. North Melbourne will not bid at pick one on either Collingwood's father-son Nick Dacos or Western Bulldogs' father-son recruit Sam Darcy in what will be a small relief for the Magpies and the Bulldogs. I'm just, as someone that is a member of a club, and when I say member, a member of a club board, I'm fascinated to your thoughts on a club sort of publicly declaring a stance like that. And does it not matter? Does it matter if you're a North Melbourne fan? Would you like it? Would you like them to stick it a little bit to the Magpies?
Yeah, it depends which way you're inclined. But also then the counter to that, which North Melbourne's probably taking, is they're saying that Jason Horne Francis
is the best player in the draft.
You're the best player in the draft, and we're going to honour you with that, which comes with a little financial package as well. But it also...
And I quite like that. I mean, was it... So the Crows bid on Hugo Hagen?
Yes. Yep. Yep. Yes. But if they had him at the top of their list, they had him at the top of their list. But it's a bit of the old...
Yeah, but the Bulldogs would have said, well, you know, good luck on the person who went pick two is completely out of my head. Riley Thilthorpe. Thank you.
Sounds like you got a mouth guard in when you say Thilthorpe.
Yeah, so then you've got to explain to Riley that, well, we've taken you first, but we didn't actually think you were the best player.
Yeah, so there's a bit of that at play.
I can see North's argument.
Yeah, it's a bit of that at play, but and then it comes down to picks two and three, which is the Giants and the... who's got pick three?
Gold Coast.
Gold Coasting Suns.
Yep.
What they do there, because both those sides could do with a Nick Dacos or Darcy.
So let me ask you this then. If I agree, you know, if them declaring that stance is fine, if you were a North Melbourne member, would you prefer that they announce that to you in a letter to members or on the website?
They pretty much have, haven't they? By announcing it to everyone.
Mm. Well, they've announced it through Jake.
Yeah, Jake. Jake's...
He's the best. He's the original two scoops. I'm just interested in...
Yeah, I get what you're saying. Like, if you're the...
I agree with their stance, by the way. Like,
I do too.
I'm just interested in the optics of how you tell people and if you tell people. Because a lot of clubs just would have gone, we'll wait till the draft night.
I get the sense under David Noble, and we've spoken to him on this station, is that he doesn't see the sense in playing games. He just, you say what it is, you be open, you be clear. They've been asked, obviously, Horne Francis has been interviewed a number of times, you know, doing the old, going through the draft camp sort of stuff, which I'm not sure why he's doing all that stuff anyway, if we already know he's pick one. What's he proving? Why do they need his 20-meter speed test?
Well, those tests are overrated. You know that as much as anyone.
So why is he doing it?
Well, no, it's going through, jumping through the hoops that he needs to jump through.
Yeah,
right?
Actually jumping through hoops. seriously, why is he doing it?
Yeah.
He's the number one pick. You might as well just get him fitted out for his club suit. That's where he should be doing.
Yeah, I agree. And by the way, Gold Trip out of the Cox Plate after failing to satisfy the veterinary team from Racing Victoria. You got questions for Andrew Bensley? Are you coming armed?
I have so many questions.
The great Andrew Bensley to give us a full preview on a huge weekend of racing. It's next on
Sports Day. Day for Kia. The new Kia Niro electric SUV range has landed. And Red Energy, awarded Canstar's most trusted energy retailer nationally for 2021. That's Red Energy.
Welcome back to Sports Day. We're here for Red Energy, Canstar's most trusted energy retailer, and the new Kia Niro, the electric SUV range, which has now landed. You only go to one man this time of the year, our own racing expert, Andrew Bensley. It is a huge weekend, one of my favourite weekends on the racing calendar, I reckon, Jimmy. Manicato Stakes tonight at 8:15. It's a weird race. It's an interesting field, I must say. And then the Cox Plate, the big one, tomorrow. AB, welcome.
Yeah, g'day to you, Sam and Jimmy and listeners. And I think what we've been waiting for is some rain. And talking with Marty Sinan out there at the Valley in the first couple of races, the Bureau's telling him that the rain isn't going to arrive until around midnight tonight. So okay. The Manicato Stakes could be run on running brisk time on a good three track. So we'll be all over that in a couple of hours. But I will say that the rain, if it comes, Marty's confident that it'll be sort of around that soft six range early, and then it depends really what the showers do through the day. So maybe, you know, we're going to get through tonight anyway, Sam. That's the good thing for night racing.
Andrew, let's start with the Manicato. And Sam and I are off air. We've had the grey leads out. We've scratched a few out. We've circled a few others. You go to the experts in the paper. Every single one of them's got a different winner.
Yeah, I think that's right, Jimmy. I think tonight and even tomorrow's Cox Plate, you could circle a few numbers for mine. I know Kieran Maher and David Eustace have got multiple runners. Even when I did a show on Thursday or Wednesday night with Kieran, and he said, don't even rule out a way game. It's an outsider in the race, but she's capable. She's got a tricky draw to deal with from the 1,200-metre start, but if there's a little bit of pace up there, he's certainly not ruling out from flashing late. I'm a bit of a Lombardo fan. I love winners. And we know that, you know, there's been a lot of discussion whether this is a true Group 1 field. Maybe it's not because of the Everest being so close to it this year. But Lombardo, just Mick Price is a trainer that really sets them. And the last three wins have been encouraging to give it a crack, go and have a go, and the barriers just reach all right for mine.
So are we taking the field and just relaxing and watching the race for our quaddie? Is this what you're telling us?
Depends how well you're going. I will say that I've backed Lombardo, but I've had a little bit at odds on Expressway for Nick Ryan. Again, drawn tricky, but likes it out there. Won the Chautauqua from a wide draw, and Nick's pretty happy being out there. It just allows the horse to finish off without being held up, and that's what can happen in these races, that you always get two or three back on the inside that don't end up getting run. So I've had something small on Express Pass as well in the Manicato, because as you're right saying, Jimmy, you've got about 10 circles there at the moment.
I do, actually.
Yeah, we've got to reduce those, AB. Hey, tomorrow, is anyone capable? Well, I'm sure plenty capable. Will anyone spoil the Zaki party, in your opinion?
Yeah, yes, no doubt. I think this is a race of many chances, Sam. James McDonald has been doing his isolation there at Yarrawonga. He's going to come and ride. He's got great confidence in Zaki. But look, I think that this is a cracking race. You know, there's probably Corsign Mav and maybe Dallas and that you could rule out, but I reckon any of the others can be in the finish. What's wrong with any of the others? Every time I see the replay of the American win of State of Rest, I'm saying that Joseph O'Brien's got a really strong finishing type, really accelerated, looking at it, you know, I guess the only hesitation if it ends up being soft, but the horse has got reasonably strong two-year-old form on soft, and I know Joseph isn't too worried if the rain does come. But now, the only thing I'd say, Sam, if the rain comes and affects the track, then probably either comes out or just doesn't appreciate the soft. But I think all the others could easily win.
Now, I'm going to give him a bit of self-indulgence. There's a horse running around in race four on Saturday, and it's called Dosh.
Oh, please.
Is Sam going to be crying in his Weet-Bix again, or is he got an actual legitimate chance? It's just not all hype.
Well, the only lead I can take is Graeme Begg, and he's a trainer that took non-conformist into a Caulfield Cup and ran a very, very good second. Graeme Stable's up and about, Jimmy. So he could have easily gone to tonight. I don't know whether the ownership really were happy with it or some small portions of that, but Dosh goes to the Red Anchor tomorrow. I reckon Generation's probably the one you've got to beat, but if Dosh can come across from that just slightly tricky draw, then it's got to be going mighty close, just off what Graeme Begg's wanted to do here.
Hey, AB, we love having you on, and we love our racing on this show, and I don't mean to be political at all, but the no crowds at Moonee Valley tonight or tomorrow, I mean, I know that the Moonee Valley Racing Club was handcuffed by the government restrictions, so it's a moot point, I know, but geez, it would have been great just to sneak a few in, even if not tonight, then tomorrow.
Yeah, oh, look, I think all of us agree, but it comes down to, you know, government announcement, Sam. That's where it simply sits. Mm. So the government made a decision regarding Flemington, that's what it is. And Moonee Valley are obviously disappointed that the crowd, particularly tomorrow, that they couldn't have 5,000 or 10,000, but it really came down to the government timing. They've done a lot of special things for members and as much as possible, Sam, but... yeah, there's nothing like, you know, Melbourne Cup Day with 10,000 is going to seem a bit strange, but at least there'll be some atmosphere.
Andrew, everyone who has kids say they don't pick their favourites, but they really have a favourite. Is this your favourite weekend of racing, or is it Derby Day? Is it Caulfield Cup, or you big Melbourne Cup man?
Jimmy. Yeah. No, I love them all, Jimmy. It's very hard to spread as far as I look. The Cox Plate is always a strong race. We, you know, in recent times, we know it was dominated by Winks, but it is the Weight for Age Championship. You look at what Derby Day offers at Flemington next week with the calibre of the 3-year-olds in the sprint and also in the Derby. And yeah, Derby Day is pretty hard to beat, but this Cox Plate, it's always. And always in the history has been a beauty, and it will be tomorrow.
Righto, AB. This is where you earn your big bucks here. Everyone's just going to turn up their radio just a little bit. Now, you don't have to give us your top three if you haven't got them, but you can just give the winners if you want. But I want tonight, Manicato at 8:15. I want the Cox Plate tomorrow, and then any other thing that you like around the country.
Well, certainly, as I said earlier, I think Lombardo wins the Manicato tonight. What finishes close to it? Well, I've had something small express pass, and I reckon maybe Jonker is the other one.
Okay.
And expect away game to be flashing late there. Probably that's the Manicato. I'm tipping State of Rest to win the Cox Plate. I think that every time I see the replay, as I said earlier, of this Joseph O'Brien horse, they rate it maybe a better win of Adelaide's in America prior to that horse coming across and winning the Cox Plate. So, State of Rest to win. Zaki, Very Elegant, Animo, they're all going to be around the placings. There's going to be a few weaving there late. And I will say that in the Moonee Valley Gold Cup, if the forecast rain arrives, Miami Bound, last year's winner, is going to be extremely hard to beat. Mm. But I'm all over Pondus for Lloyd Williams and Robert Hickmont. I think Pondus has made great fitness improvement talking to the team since the Bart coming. So, that's my tip in the Moonee Valley Gold Cup. That's race 8, number 10, Pondus.
Race 8, number 10, Jimmy. Just make sure you get all these tips down, please, because you're going to be asking me for them.
I reckon he's a floating. I reckon he's a floating artist fan, but I'm a Pondus fan.
Are you a floating artist?
Yeah,
you can pick him. AB, great to have you on. We love this time of the year, and we love chatting to you about it. Good luck tomorrow and tonight, and we'll chat to you next week.
No, good luck with Dosh also, Sam, and we'll talk
Thanks,
to you next
AB.
Week.
Andrew Bensley there, the only man you speak to this time of the year. He is as good as they get on radio. It's going to be an exciting weekend. So there you go. So State of Rest, one of these unknowns that we've talked about during the week. Jimmy, AB likes the international form and has tipped State of Rest to upset Zaki tomorrow. Very interesting stuff. Of course, Gold Trip out of the Cox Plate, failing to satisfy that veterinary team from Racing Victoria. We're going to check all the odds of those races and plenty more next with Duncan McRae from Bluebet.
It's time for a Bluebet odds update. Bet same game multis with Bluebet. Download the apps today. Gamble responsibly.
Oh, coming up to 7 o'clock, which means we are, what, an hour 20-ish away from the Manicato Stakes. It's one of the great nights in racing, one of the great weekends. We've said it all night. Duncan McRae from Bluebet's going to give us the best punters preview. Dunk, welcome to you. What say the numbers tonight?
Yeah, good evening, Sammy, Jimmy, all the punters. Yeah, massive night at the Valley over the next 24 hours. Well, let's go to the Manicato, boys. Race 7, Savatoxel, an easing favourite, $5. The big money's been for Lombardo. He's been $9 into $5, and a bit of money round for Ingratiating, $11 into $9. But Lombardo, the favourite to take out the Manicato tonight, boys.
Who do you like there, Dunk? Just your thoughts?
Oh, I'm going to go Ingratiating, boys. I think Craig Williams has had a little tough time. I think he's going to turn it around heading into the big race tomorrow.
Has it fluctuated much? Because Sam and I can't pick a winner. We've circled about five or six names.
Has AB, you said just before, it's just a brutal race to be hunting on.
Yeah, is it? Has it been fluctuating with you guys?
Oh, we're most of the money, Jimmy's been Lombardo, as I said. He went up $7 now into $5. So 75% of the money we hold at the moment, number six, Lombardo.
All right. Is it any clearer for the Cox Plate? Is it Zaki Party, as we've sort of described it? Ash Barty.
You stole that from me.
I did. I absolutely hijacked it. Is it Zaki? Is it Very Elegant? Is it something else?
Oh, I think it's Animo, boys. That's been the best back runner. We went as much as $8 bet early in the week. Now into $3.90. Zaki's still favourite at $2.90. Very Elegant at $5. But the three-year-old, Animo, as we mentioned, Craig Williams with the blue Ferrari.
Yes.
Can it do it?
It's nearly giving... Zaki's nearly giving it 10 kilos.
The blue Ferrari on blue bet, and Dunk's given someone $8 on Animo earlier in the week. How's that person feeling, Dunk?
Oh, well, you know, the overs gods, boys. Whenever you get the overs, it never comes off. So we'll see what happens tomorrow. But, yeah, good money for Animo with Craig Williams on board.
Thanks for coming on, Dunk. Enjoy the weekend.
Thanks, boys. Take care. Have a great weekend. Thank you.
Duncan McRae from Bluebet, the only place to bet. Make sure you are gambling responsibly. Wow, we are here. We've done it. We've got through the week. You're not doing anything tonight.
Nah.
I'm going out for dinner. We've got a 90-minute sitting. It's going to be the greatest 90 minutes of the last 18 months.
It's school canteen style, in and out.
And you know what? I couldn't be happier about it.
No, I'm not in a rush.
Great to have you on this week. It's been a pleasure the last couple of weeks. Let's do it again soon. Enjoy the weekend.
Sure.
Jimmy Bartel joining us on Sports Day. Jared's on his much-deserved annual leave. And you are about to enjoy your much-deserved freedom on your weekend. Enjoy, Victoria. You are listening to the Friday edition of Sports Day. We're powered by Red Energy, Canstar's most trusted energy retailer nationally for 2021. And for Wilson Homes, they believe in great design, so you love being home. Happy Friday, everyone. Hate using the term Freedom Day, but happy Freedom Day, I guess, for Victorians. Hope you're planning a nice big weekend at your locals, wherever they are, whether that be a pub, a bar, a nightclub. Nightclub's open, a cafe. But we're going to take you through the next hour of sport. We're going to start with the latest in sport. Bit of news around today. Jimmy, I want to start with Ben Simmons. Mm-hmm. This is just going from bad to worse. He turned up to training on Thursday, complained of back tightness. I think he also talked about that he was suffering from mental health problems, something which the 76ers reminded him that they take extremely seriously. You know, he doesn't want to participate in drills, according to reports coming out of the US via ESPN. And I was thinking coming in here tonight, Jimmy, of your point the other night, which continues to dumbfound me in that Ben's got good people around him. And Rich Paul, LeBron James's manager, amongst others, is one of the best. I can't believe that it's got to this point now.
Yeah, I agree with you. And just for people unaware, Rich Paul is probably one of the most powerful people in the NBA as a player manager. So
yeah, he's one of the more powerful people in American sport when it comes to players.
Yeah, because hand in hand with him is LeBron James. And they handpick sides, they can negotiate players moving, and what they often do is use a current player and they'll leverage his contract to help other teammates who they have under management.
I wonder what LeBron thinks of everything going on with Ben.
Yeah, I'm sure he'd be having a big saber behind the scenes, because at some stage it affects management's reputation.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And like we said, they're highly respected, Rich Paul and their management as well. But it looks like Ben Simmons is trying to almost take a bit of the path that James Harden took last year, where you just blow it up so much.
Mm.
They almost say, I'm just going to become the biggest headache possible. You've got to get rid of me. But Daryl Morey, who's in charge of the Sixers, what we'd call as a list manager.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they always have director and vice president of basketball operations. Yeah. You know, all those really fancy terms there in the NBA. He is another very well-respected individual in NBA and has been around a long time. He said today that if this takes 4 years, it takes 4 years, the rest of Ben's contract. So they'll just fine him for 4 years. But the only way that Ben's getting out is if another team becomes a suitable trade partner. But your reputation here is getting damaged. What?
Yeah, and this guaranteed contract, you know, the five-year $170 million or whatever the ridiculous figure is, that's a problem as well. Because whether Ben likes it or not, what's happening at the moment, not one franchise in the NBA is going to touch him at that price.
No, but it's all about matching contracts. So you've actually got to find a player or a package of players
to go the other way, yeah.
To go the other way, because they have to pay a minimum, you know, like in the AFL. The AFL is about 95%, but the NBA is almost, it's like 1% or 2% different. They go over and then pay a luxury tax.
Yep.
So you've got to match contracts and then future picks and all sort of stuff and the way you can do it, but it can be done. But what happens in American sport, this can be redeemable for Ben Simmons. It can be redeemable at the Philadelphia 76ers.
No doubt it can be. It's on him to do that now.
Because they're one of the most passionate sporting fan bases in the world.
They're obsessed. They love it. But if it's a sports city. That's not dissimilar to Melbourne.
And one of their most famous Philadelphia Eagles came out today and just said, show up, practice hard, hit some free throws, start winning, and they'll love you again. So if he wants to stay, that's what can happen.
And that's literally all it is. I mean, you know, whether you want to apologise to your teammates or come out and do a press conference, you don't actually have to do that. It just starts with doing the simple things. If he does that for a few months, gets fit, eventually people are going to say, well, is he going to play? You know, he's redeemed himself.
American sports love the theatre of the comeback. And
We do as well, but you're right. In America, I reckon that's another level, isn't it? The redemption story.
Yeah, you can be a convicted criminal, come back on the field and catch a touchdown or hit 10 threes.
And you're a hero.
You're a hero again.
Okay, we'll watch that one closely and we'll keep you abreast of all those things going on with Ben Simmons next week. Speaking of heroes, Easton Wood today announcing his retirement. A 14-season career. He, of course, led the Bulldogs to their drought-breaking 2016 premiership victory in the absence of the great Robert Murphy. He became just the second premiership captain in the club's history. He's 32, which, I've got to be honest, surprised me, Jimmy, as I'm sure it did you. Had a year to go on his contract. My question to you is, do you think that Easton Wood was in the Bulldogs' best 22 next year?
Well, this is actually part of his retirement statement, that he thinks he's lost so much athleticism that he wouldn't be able to do what he thinks he's capable of doing.
Yeah, I read that.
Which then leads to what you asked me, and he didn't have faith that he'd be in the best 22 because he needs that athleticism to be able to do what he needs to do. And when you think Easton Wood, it's that high-flying, float-across, intercept mark, and he actually doesn't think that he can do that, which then he says, well, I'm not in the best 22 if I can't do that.
Now, I know that you can't answer this because you're not inside the four walls, but gut feel, do you think that, and being part of a club and being part of footy for so long where this happens, do you think that would have been a conversation that was started by Luke Beveridge?
I think he would have had that thought when he was having hamstring issues again.
Yeah.
And, you know,
because it would be a hard conversation to have, but also a very real one. You know, and I'm not saying this happened, but, you know, Easton obviously been an unbelievable player for this footy club, but, you know, you tell me, do you think your body can hold up? Because from what I've seen, you got a year left. Is it better we part ways, save a bit of cash?
Well, yeah, hopefully. And you have no doubt it probably would have been this way. When we spoke to Dave Noble and we spoke about some players being delisted, it's the ongoing conversation throughout the year. So it would have been with Easton, how's the body? What's going on? How are you shaping up? Where are you mentally? Do you have the energy and the drive to come back from the injury, fight through a position? Yeah. Potentially be playing in the VFL for the first 3 or 4 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
he doesn't want to do that.
No.
It sounds like they've worked it out really nicely, but he's going to be remembered fondly, isn't he, for decades and centuries to come for Western Bulldogs supporters. No doubt about that. All right, let's talk a bit of racing. We've talked about it all week. Manicato not far away tonight. It looks like the conditions are going to be wet. We've got the Cox Plate tomorrow. Jimmy, I'm going to leave this fairly open for you. Who do you like? Who don't you like? What are your initial stake thoughts going into tonight and tomorrow?
Well, I'll start with tomorrow. I think Very Elegant and Zaki have the potential, you know, when we say out of 10, they have the potential to put down a 9 or a 10 out of 10. Like, just put the foot down, absolutely gassed all opponents. But everybody I keep talking to keeps talking me into Animo. Light of weight, consistent, on the rise, young.
Yeah, that's right. Might not have found
its best yet.
Its best yet, which is scary.
Yeah,
yeah, so, I like Animo.
Yeah, I like it too. But it keeps getting crunched. I know that's not everything, but and the money does follow a lot of people's in the industry's thinking.
And then who wins tonight? Manicata not too far away.
I'm tossing and turning. Throw a name at me that you really can. Sell me someone.
The two that I really like are Savatou XL, who I think is the horse to beat, but might not love the wet. And I think 50 stars. Not 50 stars. Sneaky Five.
Yeah.
I'm getting my numbers confused. 50 stars, also a good horse. Sneaky Five, I think, they're my top two. They'll be the ones I'll be quinellering. Quinellering? Yep.
Yeah, I keep going at this with the grey lid because I keep making a really good case for it.
Jimmy, Manicados and Cox Plates, they're weird races.
Yeah.
Anything can happen. So I completely understand where you're at mentally because I'm right there with you.
Yeah.
It could be a no bet sort of night.
Manicato, what am I going? I am going Ingratiating for a roughie.
Ingratiating can absolutely win, yeah. No doubt about that. And just get the biro out. Don't worry about the grey lead. Race four tomorrow.
Number four.
Mooney Valley, race four.
I've already got a
Dosh.
No, I've gone around you there.
Hang on, what?
No, not Dosh. Dosh is not happening for me. Dosh to me is probably...
You're not... Are you backing another horse in Dosh's race?
Yeah, I sure am. Race four, number four, Generation. That's mine. For tomorrow, that's probably my best bet because it's running against Dosh. So, the field is considerably weaker with Dosh in it. I think Dosh is going to be prime for next year's Royal Melbourne Show where the kids feed little carrots.
This is not funny at all.
Or down at St Kilda where, you know, my son's going to have a look at it. You know, walk around, Cantina Gardens.
You're not funny at all.
When they clean up from a music festival or something.
I look forward to calling you tomorrow, the minute that she crosses the line first.
Please do.
I look forward to it.
Let's screen it.
More sports day coming up. We're going to go to the best ofs. Paul Marsh had some interesting things to say, didn't he, Jimmy, this week?
Yep.
On obviously the vaccines. Another Players Association boss, if you like, the ACA boss, Todd Greenberg. We're going to hear from him. And also, we'll finish off with the great AB, Andrew Bensley, ahead of a huge weekend of racing. Welcome back to Sports Day. We're powered by Red Energy, Canstar's most trusted energy retailer, and for Wilson Homes. They believe in great design, so you love being home. Some huge interviews this week on Sports Day, none bigger than the AFLPA boss Paul Marsh. Vaccination in sport has been a huge issue, not just this week, but for the last few months. Here's some of what Paul had to say to us.
Yeah, good to chat, guys.
Paul, this is pretty significant, is it not?
Well, it's a pretty significant issue, and you know it's complex and it's difficult, and we've spent a little while working through it with the AFL, but I think where we've landed is a fair situation now, our position for the playing group, given the circumstances that we're dealing with.
Paul, was there pressure to get one out? We saw other sports; they've come out recently in the last week or so. We even spoke to Todd Greenberg, who represents another big players' union as well. Was there any public pressure? I know you don't look at that, but was there pressure to get something out?
A bit coming from you the other day, wasn't there, Jim? Everyone wants a bit of certainty at the moment, and I think, you know, what we've been able to build into this policy is, you know, some key dates depending on where each of the states are at. So clearly at the moment in Victoria, we've got AFLW players who are in their pre-season. We've got AFL players who are wanting to get into the clubs. We need to give them some certainty. We've got players around the country in similar positions. But in other states, at the moment, there's really no COVID. So we've been able to push back dates for first and second doses in the non-Victorian states, which we think is a really pragmatic outcome. We've also built in a clause here that if the government positions change, we have an ability to review this policy. So, you know, whilst at the moment every player, the expectation is that they'll get vaccinated by these dates, if things change, you know, we can change with it.
So on that, Paul, and you know, the ramifications for players that don't get vaccinated, I think
are pretty extreme, and I'm not saying that in a good or bad sense. They can exercise any rights that the club may have to terminate a player's playing contract, but such rights are not to be exercised prior to the 18th of May. So that's really the cutoff date for when things can kick in. Given how full-on some of these sections of the contract around remuneration are you confident that compliance is going to be quite high? I mean, of course, you wouldn't have been able to get all 800 players on the phone in the last few weeks, but I can only gauge from this that the PA's got a fairly good sense that the vast majority of players are going to get vaxxed.
Yeah, I mean, we've met with all playing groups, male and female, over the last month or so. We've got a very good sense of it. I mean, I don't think I'd be stating this too highly to say that we're looking at probably 99% plus players that will be vaccinated. So, practically, this is not a huge issue for the collective, but for the individuals that are, working through these issues at the moment, clearly it's a big issue. And I think, we've had to negotiate that with the AFL. I think we've landed in a fair position for all sides, but the players still have an opportunity to work through their own individual circumstances, which we continue to discuss with them.
I agree with all that, Paul, and as we read through it, it makes a lot of sense, and we make a lot of assumptions that pretty much everyone will take up the double vax. It says one line: clubs will determine the action to be taken with respect to payments, employment status. So is that putting it that each club can make their own decision, or will the players' union and the AFL still have an involvement if a player decides not to be double vaxxed?
Well, I think, what we've put in place here is that every player will receive a payment of a minimum of 25% for the AFLW players, their contract. For the AFL male players, 25% of the minimum. But there's an opportunity for the club and the player then to negotiate that. And there'll be different circumstances. I mean, some players might be on multi-year contracts, and clubs may want to keep them on their list and pay them at full-toed odds. They're all the things that will be worked through. Clearly from a legal perspective, without going too far down that path, we've taken advice here, and the player's position is not a particularly strong one. We've gone through what we think is a pragmatic outcome. The industry is supportive. We are an industry, I think, that does support our people well. So I think there's an understanding here that there wouldn't be a player in the competition who doesn't want to play, and there are some circumstances here that are making it difficult for players to get vaccinated. So I think we're all doing our best to look after those players.
The legal issue that you just mentioned about the players not being in a strong position, I think that's a fascinating one for so many of our listeners, Paul. I mean, we can't use players' names, obviously, because that would be unfair. But if player XYZ, who's on a five-year deal and very well remunerated comparative to his teammates, decides, well, actually, I don't want to get vaccinated, and when I signed this multi-year deal with my club, there was nothing in the contract about this. It would be very interesting for a lawyer on his behalf to argue that case, I would think.
Yeah, and look, I don't want to get too much into the detail, and this isn't just a football issue. This is, any worker in the current environment. It's a consideration here that we've worked through with the AFL in developing the policy.
And do you feel like this is just another example of footballers, whether they want to be or not, have to be, Jimmy, and you've been through this, they have to be at the forefront of this in social issues. Now, whether that's drink driving, whether that's drug use, whether it's some sort of other social issue.
Well, Tom McDonald's comments led the news. So that just proves that, that their opinion gets flows down.
But I mean, so the governments, both federally Liberal government and the Labor government here in this state, have been very, very strong, as many other degrees of politics have been, on we've got to get vaxxed. So I think that puts Paul, the AFL, and consequently its players in that box, that whether they want to be or not, they kind of have to be industry leaders in this.
Yeah, I mean, that's probably a burden that all high-profile people do carry. And I think our guys and girls carry that really well. There are times where they can be a bit of a lightning rod, but, we've got to accept that and move on. And this issue, as I said, it's been a complex one. And we're in a position now because of government directions, both in Victoria and the country, where, there's really no choice on this one. But I think, you know, if I go back to the point I made before about the number of players that have willingly got vaccinated here, you know, we're well ahead of, you know, what we're seeing in community at the moment. So I'm really proud of what the our members have done on this particular topic. And, you know, we're certainly supportive of trying to get as many of the players vaccinated as possible.
Paul, your organisation does, as you said, it supports its players brilliantly. Have you had much consultation with the AFLW women's player who's decided not to be vaxxed and really is foregoing her AFLW career in that way?
Yeah, look, you know, Jimmy, we don't tend to talk about individual circumstances, but, you know, what I would say is that, you know, we're aware of players from around the competition. We've had lots of conversations with individual players and, you know, we'll continue to support, you know, any player in this position.
Do you think, like, we saw Tom McDonald that Jimmy mentioned a couple of nights, Paul, and you would have seen those comments. He's double vaxxed, but he thinks it's wrong to mandate. Do you get a sense that there are more of those types in the amongst your constituents?
Yeah, I mean, like any issue, AFL players are just a subset of the community. So, you know, you go to a dinner party, which, you know, hopefully we can do from tomorrow.
Touch wood, yeah.
You'll probably get, you know, 10 people sitting around a table and there'll be two or three that will have that view. So our players are no different in that sense. And, you know, I think it's really healthy that we have players that are willing to speak up and have the courage to speak up on issues. Because as Jimmy said, you know, they will be front page news. But I think it's a really healthy thing that players are prepared to speak up on issues. So, you know, this one's no different.
And what would be, Paul, without going into specifics, I guess, an example of a medical exemption? So just reading from the document here, for players who do not comply with the policy and do not have an approved medical exemption from the AFL. So there can be players who aren't fully vaxxed playing with an exemption?
Well, it's only basically what lines up with the government exemptions, which I'm sure you're aware is very narrow. It's basically, you know, if you can prove you've had an anaphylactic reaction to it. So it's, you know, it's nearly impossible to prove.
Okay. Well, Paul, it's a crazy time, for want of a better term, and it is for so many parts of our community. And as you rightly suggested, the AFL is a subset of that, but it's still a very public subset of it. So we appreciate you coming on, and we'll push ahead for what we hope to be a very successful AFLW season and then into the AFL men's next year. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks, guys. Good to chat.
Interesting stuff there from Paul Marsh. More Sports Day after this. We're going to hear from the Cricketers Association next. Welcome back to Sports Day. We're here for Red Energy, Canstar's most trusted energy retailer, and for Wilson Homes. They believe in great design, so you love being home. Sam McClure and Jimmy Bartel with you, as we have been all week. And this week, earlier, we spoke with Todd Greenberg, the boss of the Cricketers Association. Paul Marsh, you just heard of, thinks that around 99% of AFL players, including the men's and the women's game, are going to be fully vaccinated. And it looks like there are going to be similar levels of compliance in cricket. Let's hear from Todd.
Evening, guys. Nice to talk to you.
It's a precarious position, I think is the best way of putting it, and it's a bit of a minefield for all of us, Todd. What's the structure of what you've been telling your players? Is there a mandate? And I guess by virtue of the fact that a lot of your players play internationally, it makes it a different scenario.
Yeah, we certainly haven't mandated it to anybody. We've taken a slightly nuanced approach with Cricket Australia and tried to do as much education and information sharing as we possibly can. And I've got to give the state associations around the country and Cricket Australia's medics an enormous rap, because they've done an enormous amount of work with the playing groups, giving them lots of information. And look, I don't have the most recent data in front of me, but as of a couple of days ago, we were all but there. We're almost to 100% of all our players with first dose, and I think we're well past 90% fully vaccinated. So
Todd, you haven't had anyone come to you and say that they don't want to get vaccinated?
No, okay. We haven't. We've had some questions. We've had lots of questions, and rightfully so. I think like anybody in the community, they would ask questions about vaccination. But we've tried to give them all of the information. So rather than, you know, push the information, we're opening up dialogue. And it's been really well received. I mean, as you've just said before, you know, cricket's an international game. So people realise that if you're going to go internationally, you're going to need a vaccination in order to travel. So, you know, this is across all of our national men's and women's teams, all domestic players, BBL, WBBL, all the way across the country. So, you know, we're in a really, really positive position as we head into summer.
Todd, Jimmy Bartel, really appreciate you coming on and being open and having this discussion, because, as we know, everyone's fascinated by what all their sporting codes are doing. A lot of Australian sports love to look overseas, and we see the NBA Players Association was one of the first to make sort of conditions. If you are vaccinated or you're not, so then they allow the choice. Is that a discussion being had with the Australian Cricket Board?
Oh, I think it's a discussion being had with all sports, to be fair, between the players and all sports governing bodies. And there's a number of different ways you can take this. In cricket, the view that we've taken is that rather than push a policy on somebody, let's have a conversation and see where that takes us. And, you know, in a really mature sport like cricket is, you know, with a really high quality playing group, both across males and females, we've seen, you know, pretty much 100% compliance on vaccination. So I think that sends a really good message. All credit to Cricket Australia and the state associations for working closely with us on that. And as I said before, the chief medical officers have spent an enormous amount of time educating players and giving them the right information in order to make good informed decisions. And, you know, ultimately what they're doing is protecting each other, but importantly also they're protecting the game.
Well, you're ultimately charged with protecting the players. That's your brief, that's your charter. Have you workshopped if you had a player or a number of players who said, we will not get vaccinated, but yet Australian cricket says you need to be double vaxxed to play?
Yeah, so we have worked through those at the very beginning, and ultimately, you know, there are impacts for people making decisions. So you have to make decisions, and what those decisions come with are consequences. And some of those consequences will be enforced upon by governing bodies. Others will be enforced upon by government, and some just on private business. I mean, let's face it, if I want to come to Melbourne next month and I want to fly on Qantas, I'm going to have to be double vaccinated. That's a rule that Qantas have made. So I just think that, you know, in the reality and for all of us, is there'll be consequences to decisions, and ultimately people need to be well informed to make those decisions.
So Todd, on that, in principle, from where you sit, do you think decisions on mandating or saying that people in a professional landscape need to be vaccinated should be made by, in your circumstance, Cricket Australia, or it should be left up to federal and state health authorities?
Yeah, we're just of the firm view that trying to push something onto somebody and mandating it won't probably get you the result you're looking for. Working together and trying to find a way through some of those challenges is a better course of action. And that's certainly been evidenced by the approach we've taken with Cricket Australia and this particular model. Now, it may not work for everybody, but it's certainly working in our environment. And I'm really pleased about that, because what it's meant is that the players and the game are aligned in the position and they're aligned in the approach. And I think that augurs well for a partnership, if you like, going forward.
We live in a very litigious world, you know, at the moment. What happens if someone who decides to be unvaxxed, but yet they come into contact and, you know, pass on the virus to someone who is vaxxed? Wouldn't that put a very difficult situation for the entire sport?
I think it's a question. It's a really difficult question for the entire community. What happens if we're at a game and it happens to a crowd member asking for an autograph? You know, all those sorts of things. What are our venues going to be doing around the country in relation to vaccinated entry or not? You know, there's a multitude of questions that I think are coming down for all leaders across all businesses and sports. And cricket's not immune to that. But, you know, we're working our way through that slowly and surely. And I think we are going to have some challenges. There's no doubt there's going to be some bumps in the road between now and the start of the Ashes and through the Ashes. But, you know, open dialogue, information, and having honest conversations with people are probably the only way through.
One of those honest conversations, I'm sure, will be with Dominic Perrottet. I'm sure, Todd, you've got him on speed dial by now. With all the players coming back into Australia, particularly those from the Middle East early November and onwards, is it just likely, given the new border laws in New South Wales, they'll come through Sydney?
Yeah, well, it's fair to say some of our IPL players have delayed their flights until 1 November to come home. And why wouldn't you if you can come home now and not have to do 14 days of hard quarantine? Many of our players have made huge sacrifices over the last, you know, 12 to 18 months and have done it multiple times, so they'll be pleased not to do that. But, yeah, certainly the route in through Sydney is going to be much easier for a lot of the players, and that'll be really welcomed by a lot of them who are all double vaxxed and have been double vaxxed for a long period of time, and get home to their families and make it a lot more seamless. So we're really pleased about that.
And before you leave us, any potential changes to the schedule of the Ashes given border regulations?
No, look, I think, you know, we're obviously an issue for Cricket Australia, but in my discussions with Nick and his team, you know, they're really keen to see the Ashes played as per the schedule. And
yep.
We're very confident. We have been very confident the whole way through that'll be the case. And really looking forward to the 8th of December. 50 days today till the start of the Ashes. So there's a lot of excited players. So, and there's equally a lot of excited fans. So we're all looking forward to it.
Todd, really appreciate you coming on. It's an interesting time for everyone in sport. We can't wait for the Ashes. 50 days in counting. Talk soon.
Good on you guys. Nice to chat. Cheers.
Todd Greenberg there. We're going to wrap up the week on Sports Day next. We're going to get you the best tips and the best preview for what is a sensational weekend of racing with the great Andrew Bensley. Welcome back to Sports Day. We're here for Red Energy, Canstar's most trusted energy retailer nationally for 2021, and for Wilson Homes. They believe in great design, so you love being home. Well, what a way to wrap up the week as we head to the end of the week here in Melbourne. What has been a huge week, Freedom Friday. Sam McClure and Jimmy Bartel with you for the entire week, and we'll go out on a high. The great Andrew Bensley joined us a little earlier tonight, and he gave us the preview into the Cox Plate. Welcome back to Sports Day. We're here for Red Energy, Canstar's most trusted energy retailer, and the new Kia Niro, the electric SUV range, which is now landed. You only go to one man this time of the year, our own racing expert, Andrew Bensley. It is a huge weekend, one of my favourite weekends on the racing calendar, I reckon, Jimmy. Manicato Stakes tonight at 8:15. It's a weird race. It's an interesting field, I must say. And then the Cox Plate, the big one, tomorrow. AB, welcome.
Yeah, g'day to you, Sam and Jimmy and listeners. And I think what we've been waiting for is some rain. And talking with Marty Sinan out there at the Valley in the first couple of races, the Bureau's telling him that the rain isn't going to arrive until around midnight tonight. So the Manicato Stakes could be run on a all running brisk time on a good three track. So we'll be all over that in an hour, a couple of hours. But I will say that the rain, if it comes, Marty's confident that it'll be sort of around that soft six range early, and then it depends really what the showers do through the day. So maybe, you know, we're going to get through tonight anyway, Sam. That's the good thing for night racing.
Andrew, let's start with the Manicato. And Sam and I are off air. We've had the grey leads out. We've scratched a few out. We've circled a few others. You go to the experts in the paper. Every single one of them's got a different winner.
Yeah, I think that's right, Jimmy. I think tonight and even tomorrow's Cox Plate, you could circle a few numbers for mine. I know Kieran Maher and David Eustace have got multiple runners. Even when I did a show on Thursday or Wednesday night with Kieran, and he said, don't even rule out a way game. It's an outsider in the race, but she's capable. She's got a tricky draw to deal with from the 1,200-metre start, but if there's a little bit of pace up there, he's certainly not ruling out from flashing late. I'm a bit of a Lombardo fan. I love winners. And we know that, you know, there's been a lot of discussion whether this is a true Group 1 field. Maybe it's not because of the Everest being so close to it this year. But Lombardo, just Mick Price is a trainer that really sets them. And the last three wins have been encouraging to give it a crack, go and have a go, and the barriers just reach all right for mine.
So are we taking the field and just relaxing and watching the race for our quaddie? Is this what you're telling us?
Depends how well you're going. I will say that I've backed Lombardo, but I've had a little bit at odds on Expressway for Nick Ryan. Again, drawn tricky, but likes it out there. Won the Chautauqua from a wide draw, and Nick's pretty happy being out there. It just allows the horse to finish off without being held up, and that's what can happen in these races, that you always get two or three back on the inside that don't end up getting run. So I've had something small on Express Pass as well in the Manicato, because as you're right saying, Jimmy, you've got about 10 circles there at the moment.
Oh, I do, actually. we've got to reduce those, AB. Hey, tomorrow, is anyone capable? Well, I'm sure plenty capable. Will anyone spoil the Zaki party, in your opinion?
Yeah, oh, yes, no doubt. I think this is a race of many chances, Sam. James McDonald has been doing his isolation there at Yarrawonga. He's going to come and ride. He's got great confidence in Zaki. But look, I think that this is a cracking race. You know, there's probably Corsign Mav and maybe Dallas and that you could rule out, but I reckon any of the others can be in the finish. What's wrong with any of the others? Every time I see the replay of the American win of State of Rest, I'm saying that Joseph O'Brien's got a really strong finishing type, really accelerated. Looking at it, you know, I guess the only hesitation if it ends up being soft, but the horse has got reasonably strong two-year-old form on soft, and I know Joseph isn't too worried if the rain does come. But now, the only thing I'd say, Sam, if the rain comes and affects the track, then probably either comes out or just doesn't appreciate the soft. But I think all the others could easily win.
Now, I'm going to give him a bit of self-indulgence. There's a horse running around in race four on Saturday, and it's called Dosh.
Is
Sam going to be crying in his Weet-Bix again, or is he got an actual legitimate chance? It's just not all hype.
Well, the only lead I can take is Graham Begg, and he's a trainer that took non-conformist into a Caulfield Cup and ran a very, very good second. Graham Stable's up and about, Jimmy, so... he could have easily gone to tonight. I don't know whether the ownership really were happy with it or some small portions of that, but Dosh goes to the Red Anchor tomorrow. I reckon Generation's probably the one you've got to beat, but if Dosh can come across from that just slightly tricky draw, then it's got to be going mighty close, just off what Graham Beck's wanted to do here.
Hey, AB, we love having you on, and we love our racing on this show, and I don't mean to be political at all, but the no crowds at Moonee Valley tonight or tomorrow, I mean, I know that the Moonee Valley Racing Club was handcuffed by the government restrictions,
yeah.
So it's a moot point, I know, but geez, it would have been great just to sneak a few in, even if not tonight, then tomorrow?
Yeah, oh, look, I think all of us agree, but it comes down to... You know, government announcement, Sam, that's where it simply sits. Mm. So the government made a decision regarding Flemington that's what it is. And Moonee Valley are obviously disappointed that the crowd, particularly tomorrow, that they couldn't have 5,000 or 10,000, but it really came down to the government timing. They've done a lot of special things for members and as much as possible, Sam, but there's nothing like, you know, Melbourne Cup Day with 10,000 is going to seem a bit strange. But at least there'll be some atmosphere.
Andrew, everyone who has kids say they don't pick their favourites, but they really have a favourite. Is this your favourite weekend of racing, or is it Derby Day? Is it Caulfield Cup, or you big Melbourne Cup man?
Jimmy.
Yeah.
No, I love them all, Jimmy. It's very hard to spread as far as I look. The Cox Plate is always a strong race. We, you know, in recent times, we know it was dominated by Winks, but it is the Weight for Age Championship. You look at what Derby Day offers at Flemington next week with the calibre of the three-year-olds in the sprint and also in the Derby. And, yeah, Derby Day's pretty hard to beat, but this Cox Plate, it's always, and always in the history, has been a beauty, and it will be tomorrow.
Righto, AB. This is where you earn your big bucks here. Everyone's just going to turn up their radio just a little bit. Now, you don't have to give us your top three if you haven't got them, but you can just give the winners if you want. But I want tonight, Manicato at 8:15. I want the Cox Plate tomorrow, and then any other thing that you like around the country.
Well, certainly, as I said earlier, I think Lombardo wins the Manicato tonight. What finishes close to it? Well, I've had something small express pass, and I reckon maybe Jonker is the other one.
Okay.
And expect away game to be flashing late there. Probably that's the Manicato. I'm tipping State of Rest to win the Cox Plate. I think that every time I see the replay, as I said earlier, of this Joseph O'Brien horse, they rate it maybe a better win of Adelaide's in America prior to that horse coming across and winning the Cox Plate. So, State of Rest to win. Zaki, Very Elegant, Animo, they're all going to be around the placings. There's going to be a few weaving there late. And I will say that in the Moonee Valley Gold Cup, if the forecast rain arrives, Miami Bound last year's winner is going to be extremely hard to beat. Mm. But I'm all over Pondus for Lloyd Williams and Robert Hickmont. I think Pondus has made great fitness improvement talking to the team since the Bart coming. So that's my tip in the Moonee Valley Gold Cup. That's race 8, number 10, Pondus.
Race 8, number 10, Jimmy. Just make sure you get all these tips down, please, because you're going to be asking me for them.
I reckon he's a floating. I reckon he's a floating artist fan, but I'm a Pondus fan.
Are you a floating artist?
Yeah,
you can pick him. AB, great to have you on. We love this time of the year, and we love chatting to you about it. Good luck tomorrow and tonight, and we'll chat to you next week.
No, good luck with Dosh also, Sam, and we'll talk
Thanks,
to you
AB.
Next week.
Andrew Bensley there, the only man you speak to this time of the year. He is as good as they get on radio.
Yeah, geez, it's going to be an exciting weekend. So there you go. So state of rest, one of these unknowns that we've talked about during the week, Jimmy. AB likes the international form and has tipped state of rest to upset Zaki tomorrow. Very interesting stuff. Of course, Gold Trip out of the Cox Plate, failing to satisfy that veterinary team from Racing Victoria. We're going to check all the odds of those races and plenty more next with Duncan McRae from Bluebet.
It's time for a Bluebet odds update. Bet same game multis with Bluebet. Download the apps today. Gamble responsibly.
Oh, coming up to 7 o'clock, which means we are, what, an hour 20-ish away from the Manikado Stakes. It's one of the great nights in racing, one of the great weekends. We've said it all night. Duncan McRae from Bluebet's going to give us the best punters preview. Dunk, welcome to you. What say the numbers tonight?
Yeah, good evening, Sammy, Jimmy, all the punters. Yeah, massive night at the Valley over the next 24 hours. Well, let's go to the Manikado boys. Race 7, Savatoxel, an easing favourite, $5. The big money's been for Lombardo. He's been 9 into $5, and a bit of money round for Ingratiating, 11 into 9. But Lombardo, the favourite to take out the Manikado tonight, boys.
Who do you like there, Dunk? Just your thoughts?
Oh, I'm going to go Ingratiating, boys. I think Craig Williams is at a little tough time. I think he's going to turn it around heading into the big race tomorrow.
Has it fluctuated much? Because Sam and I can't pick a winner. We've circled about five or six names.
Has even AB said just before, it's just a brutal race to be hunting on.
Yeah, is it? Has it been fluctuating with you guys?
Oh, where most of the money, Jimmy's been Lombardo, as I said. He went up $7 now into $5. So 75% of the money we're holding at the moment, number 6, Lombardo.
All right. Is it any clearer for the Cox Plate? Is it Zaki Party, as we've sort of described it? Ash Party.
You stole that from me.
I did. I absolutely hijacked it. Is it Zaki? Is it very elegant? Is it something else?
Oh, I think it's Animo, boys. That's been the best back runner. We went as much as $8 better earlier in the week. Now into $3.90. Zaki's still favourite at $2.90. Very elegant at $5. But the three-year-old Animo, as we mentioned, Craig Williams with the blue Ferrari.
Yes. We love AB. He's been in absolute red-hot form this week. In fact, he's been in red-hot form for a while. Unfortunately, Jimmy hasn't been in that sort of form. Don't listen to him. It won't be Generation passing the post first tomorrow. Take it from me. Race 4, Dosh. I think she'll be winning. Jimmy, great to have you on the last couple of weeks.
Thanks, Sam.
Let's do it again soon.
Okay.